I want to begin by asking you this morning, are you a kind person? Is it important to be a kind person? If I were to ask your family members if they think of you as a person who is truly kind, would they honestly and easily answer, oh yes, he or she is always so kind? In the morning, earlier hour this morning, I told a story from Dr. Bill Rice, and I'm going to have another story from his life right here. In his book, More Thrilling Western Stories, he told my favorite of all of his stories. He said, my folks died when I was in my early teens. I left the old home place in Decatur, Texas, went back to the ranch country where I'd been born, and lived with my widowed sister Ruth on the Graham Ranch. Ruth taught school in a two-room schoolhouse. She and her three little boys and I lived in one room, and she taught school in the other, and I drove her car 10 miles every day to finish high school. When my school days were over, I wanted to go to college, but I had no money. It was during the Great Depression. From every standpoint, my desire to go to college seemed hopeless, but I wanted to go to Decatur Baptist College, so I sent him for an application and signed up for the fall term. I packed up my meager clothes in an old battered valise and shipped it to Decatur, Texas. Then one morning before daylight, I went down to the corral, roped and bridled a beautiful horse, put a borrowed saddle on her, led her outside the corral, mounted, waved a silent goodbye to the sleeping ranch, and turned the pony's head to the east and Decatur Baptist College over 100 miles away. I left before breakfast, didn't have a penny with which to buy lunch, had no supper. Through the long, hot hours of the day, I rode. Sometimes I followed the highways. Sometimes I cut across the prairie. And most of the time, my horse maintained a smooth foxtrot, and we covered a surprising number of miles. But they were not happy miles. The afternoon was long and hot and dusty. I was tired and hungry. I was scared, and my heart was filled with bitterness. I had been a, quote, Sunday school boy all my life. What had he got me? Almost all my friends drank liquor and smoked. I'd never done those things. I'd kept myself morally clean. My father had left me a little money when he died, but a, quote, good Christian had borrowed it, and now they would not pay it back. And here I was, an orphan boy in the midst of the Great Depression, without a home, a meal, or a penny to my name. I told everybody I was going to college, but how could I without a job and without money? I grew more bitter and backslidden in my heart as the day drew to a close. And toward evening, I became aware of dark storm clouds gathering overhead. Lightning flashed and thunder rolled, and my bitterness increased even more. Presently, I noticed a large farm home with fine barns on the left of the road, turned my horse's head up the lane, approached the front yard gate, and it began raining as I hollered the customary, hello! A gray-haired man appeared on the front porch and answered, hello yourself, get down! I dismounted, walked down the path to meet him. I'm on my way to Decatur where I'm going to college. It's going to rain in a few minutes. If you don't mind, I'd like to sleep in your barn tonight. The gray-haired man told me that was fine. Then looking me square in the face, he asked, what did you say your name was, son? I said, my name is Bill Rice. Then he asked, are you any kin to the Senator Will Rice? When I told him that Senator Will Rice was my father, the old man was delighted. Turning toward the house, he called out in a loud voice, Ma! Oh, Ma! And when a lovely gray-haired lady appeared at the door, he continued, Ma, this young man is the son of Senator Will Rice. He's going to stay all night with us. Get the victuals back on the table. The dear lady ran down the path to meet me and told me she was so glad I'd come their way. She asked if I was hungry, and I told her I was. The man and I went to the barn where we unsaddled my horse and gave her fresh water and oats and hay. In Proverbs 31:26, we read that she, the virtuous woman, openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. Ephesians 4:32 is one of the most important commands in the Bible to all of us. Read it off the screen with me, would you please, all together? And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as hath forgiven you. I want to speak to you this morning on the subject, how to use the power of kindness. You could also call this the life-transforming power of kindness. Many people think of kindness as a weak, wimpy sort of a thing that everybody should use sometime, and most of us should use a little bit more than we do. But I would like to challenge you this morning to recognize kindness as a powerful force that emanates from the hand of God Himself that will transform your life as well as the lives of all of those around you if you will use it properly and consistently. So what are some ways in which you can and should use the power of kindness? First of all, use it to enhance your own personal testimony. Proverbs 19:22, the desire of a man is his kindness. Let me tell you what I believe that verse means. The thing that makes a person a desirable person to be around is that person's kindness. Kindness in someone's personality and attitude makes it easy to be around them and removes the need for us to throw up our defenses. You ever get around somebody and you feel like you need to go like this? Kindness wipes away the uneasy feeling of the other person in some way being some kind of a threat to you. Kindness was what the children and their mothers felt when they wanted to be around Jesus, and He easily held and touched and blessed the children. Kindness will make you handsome or lovely, whether your face is attractive or not. I need some help in that area. I'm looking around the room and I don't really see anybody in particular, but maybe you could use some help as well. And it catches people's attention when you're wearing the clothing of kindness. Several years ago, my wife and I were on a plane. I was reading a book and fell asleep. Ray Jean reached over, took the book, gently covered me with a blanket. And after I woke, the man sitting on the other side leaned over and said, "I saw what your wife did. That was the kindest thing I've ever seen in my life." And the first several times my wife heard this message, she said to me, "Honey, that is such a weak story." And I said, "No, honey, that is the whole point. It doesn't take a lot of kindness to impress people." Now, sometimes we humans are kind, sometimes we're not. But our God is consistently kind, always kind, never unkind. Five times the Bible refers to God as a God of great kindness. And it says that He is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. You got anybody in your family that looks like that? God is being kind to us even when we don't recognize it. God was being kind to Jonah when He sent the whale to swallow him. He was kind to Nineveh when He sent Jonah to preach to them and warn them they were about to be destroyed. Jonah was exceedingly displeased and very angry when God was so kind to Nineveh and didn't destroy them. That did not change God's kindness. Jesus did not condone the sin of the woman taken in adultery, but He was still very kind to her. Four times in Psalm 107 we're told, "Oh, that men would praise the Lord for His goodness." So we rightly say all the time, read it with me, would you please? God is good all the time. All the time, God is good. But that same Hebrew word translated goodness also translated kindness. So we can also rightly say, read it please, God is kind all the time. All the time, God is kind. And since God is always kind, it's a godly thing to be kind. It's an ungodly thing to be unkind. And anytime, children, look at that picture. Anytime you or I act in an unkind manner or speak unkind words, we hurt our testimony and we make ourselves look ungodly and ugly to other people. Now, you remember Proverbs 31:26. Read it with me this time, would you please? She openeth... And in her tongue is the law of kindness. Think how many laws we would not even need in America if everybody just obeyed the law of kindness. Can you imagine how different this world would be if everybody in the world was kind to everybody else in the world for one full 24-hour day? Now watch my hands right here, all right? A law sets parameters. A law draws boundaries. The law of kindness is you must not go outside the boundaries of kindness anytime that you speak, the words you speak, the way you speak them, or the actions that you take. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give everybody in this room today a 24-hour challenge. I will be done speaking right about 12:15, all right? And when I finish speaking, I'm going to give everybody in this room a chance to respond. I'm going to give you a 24-hour challenge that for 24 hours straight, you will think before you speak so that every word you say and the way you say them is nothing but kind for 24 hours straight. Read it off the screen, please, everybody. If I'm going to obey the law of kindness, then my words must be kind, and the way I say them must be kind. So, I'm going to challenge you to not break the law of kindness in any way for one full 24-hour period. And if you do, ask God to forgive you. Start again. Do it until it becomes a habit ingrained in your mind and in your soul. The picture on the screen is the first time I gave this message almost 3 years ago now in Big Sandy, Texas at a conference there. That's me on the platform up there. And these three boys, I'm shocked that we actually got a picture of them, but those three boys were sitting in the back of the auditorium listening. Their mother came up to me at the table the next day. She said to me, "Brother Davis, could I share with you a testimony of what happened after you gave the kindness message last night?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, I'd love to hear it." She said, "Well, my three little boys were sitting in the back of the auditorium, and they heard you speaking, and it really made an impact on them. And they came up to me after the service, and they said, 'Mom, we have decided that beginning at midnight tonight, we are going to be nothing but kind to each other for 24 hours straight.'" She said, "Boys, that's wonderful. I'm so glad to hear it." She said, "We were up really late last night." And she said, "At 12:01 a.m., I heard the boys in the other room, and they were fighting." She said, "I walked in and I said, 'Boys, I thought you were going to be nothing but kind to each other for 24 hours straight, starting at midnight.'" She said, "They looked at me and they said, 'Mom, this is harder than we thought it was going to be.'" Here's what you have to do continually over and over. You have to do an instant replay in your mind. Those words I just said to my wife, were they kind? Was the tone of my voice kind? Was the way I said them kind? How would I feel if she spoke to me with the same words or the same tone of voice? Those words I just said to my husband, was the tone of my voice kind? How would I feel if he spoke to me the same way? Those words I just said to my son or my daughter, those words I just said to my brother or my sister, were they kind words? Was the way I said them kind? How would I feel if they spoke to me that way? Now, our problem is this, folks. So many of us have broken the law of kindness so many times that it's like running a stop sign. So many times you just run it and don't even notice that you ran it. May I ask you, are you kind? I know the picture's coming up. I love this next one. Are you kind when you're on the telephone? All right? Are your Facebook posts kind? Wow. Can't believe what people post on Facebook. Are your texts kind? Are your emails kind? When you say goodbye on the telephone, what does it sound like? Is it cold, harsh, or non-existent? Over a period of several days or weeks, repeatedly ask your mate or your children, were those words I just said as kind as they should have been? Dads, when you pray with your family, pray for them to be kind, for everybody to be kind to each other. Parents, when you correct your children, ask them, did you break the law of kindness? Or say this, now somebody broke the law of kindness here, or we wouldn't have had this problem. Who broke the law of kindness? Now please understand me here. I'm not saying that you cannot ever have any fun with your family and your friends. But you have to make sure that the fun you have doesn't break the law of kindness. Sometimes a little teasing can add a touch of spice to life that actually draws you closer to other people. Some of my children and grandchildren were at our house. We were having pizza with jalapeno slices on top of it. How many of y'all like that? Let me see your hands. Oh, my good company. I don't believe that many people in a room this size. Typically, the percentage is way low, but man, it's almost half of this crowd. Anyway, one of my grandsons started taking his off and was about to throw them away, and I said, David, wait, man. Don't throw those things away. Save those for me. Then I grinned at him and I said, you know, some folks are just too wimpy. They can't handle it. A little bit later, I took a bite of one of those things, and I want to tell you, that's one of the hottest jalapenos I ever put in my mouth. That baby set me totally on fire. And I was saying, whoa, give me a drink of water. Whoa, give me. My grandson David looked over and said, too wimpy to handle it, huh, Grandpa? A little spice can make the meal of life taste better. But you can hurt people with unkind words such as, hey, big nose, you ever thought about starring in a Pinocchio movie? I've been around some people, it's like the theme of their life is, if you don't have anything to say, say something anyway. As long as it's funny, it won't matter. But it does matter. The test of all humor is this. Does it break the law of kindness? So then it damages my relationship with other people instead of building that relationship. The law of kindness is a good law. If you break a good law, there can be bad consequences. The Bible tells about a man who split an entire nation in half just by using rough words instead of kind words. When Solomon had died, his son Rehoboam took the throne of Israel, and the young king sought the counsel of the old men. He asked them how to respond, and they said unto him, if thou be kind to this people, speak good words to them, they'll be thy servants forever. But his younger friends gave him opposite counsel, and then the king answered the people roughly. His words were rough. The way he said them was rough, and the kingdom of Israel split in half because a young king used rough words instead of kind words. He broke the law of kindness, and it cost him half his kingdom. May I ask you, is it going to cost you your family because you keep breaking the law of kindness? Is it going to cost you your marriage? Is it going to cost you your children because you keep breaking the law of kindness? You say, well, what do I do on those days when I just don't feel like being kind? Anybody ever have a day like that? Come on now. You ever have a day when I just don't feel like being kind today? You know what? You don't stop at a stop sign because you feel like you stop because you're supposed to. In Colossians, we are commanded, put on kindness. Maybe. Every morning when you put on your shirt or your blouse, you should constantly say to yourself, I'm putting on my kindness now. And then, don't take off your clothes just because somebody makes you mad. Don't do it. I promise you that every day you wear the clothing of kindness, you'll be the best dressed, most attractive person anywhere around. Read with me, everybody. Love makes you and kindness makes you likable. Number two, use the power of kindness to make a positive impact on other people's lives. Psalm 36, how excellent is thy loving kindness, O God. Therefore the children of men put their trust under the shadow of thy wings. The kindness of our God is so excellent, so loving, it makes a powerful impact on us that causes us to trust him. You don't trust somebody who's unkind to you. You don't trust a bully. Look at that picture, children. Don't ever be a bully. People won't trust you. You don't trust an angry person. Parents, look at that one. But you trust someone who is consistently kind. And if you'll do this, it can make a powerful impact on somebody's lives. The pictures I'm about to throw on the screen are the actual pictures. December 2014. A desperate grandmother named Helen Johnson went to a Dollar General store in Alabama with $1.25. She had herself and five children in the house that had already gone 2 days with no food. She tried to buy some eggs, but she was 50 cents short, so she stuffed 5 eggs in her jacket pocket and later said, "Of course, when I put them in my pocket, they broke. I'm not a good thief." William Stacy was the first police officer on the scene. When he found out what happened, he talked to the store, then went inside and bought a dozen eggs. Came out and gave them to Grandma Johnson. She tried to pay him by offering him the dollar and a quarter, but he wouldn't take the money. The officer gave her a hug and then left. And a bystander made a video of the whole thing and posted it online, where it went viral and thousands of people were touched by the kindness of a cop, including the President of the United States, who told the story nationwide. Somebody said, read it please, everybody. Kindness is a that the deaf can hear, the blind can read, and the mentally slow can understand. While we're blind and deaf and lame people crying out to Jesus or coming right up to Him, they sense the kindness in the heart of the Son of God that made Him approachable. You know, we think of anger as powerful, but kindness is more powerful. That story that I just told, what if it were different? What if that cop had angrily, roughly cuffed that grandma and hauled her away? He could have. But the kindness made it a more powerful story than if he had used anger. It's not always possible to please everybody. It's not always possible to meet everyone's expectations. But we should always do our best to be kind. And a word of caution, kindness is so powerful that it's used by people sometimes to manipulate people the wrong way. In Genesis 34, Shechem used kindness to deceive Dinah. And so many girls in our day are starving for some male kindness. When they don't get it from their daddy, sometimes they go looking for it anywhere they can find it. But every man who is kind to you is not necessarily the one for you. Number three, use the power of kindness to solve or prevent family problems. The only mention in the Bible of the law of kindness is in that passage that tells about the virtuous woman's relationship with her husband and her children. And there's probably no other area where consistent kindness is as badly needed as it is in the home. Some men say they love their wives and tell them they love her, but if you say to her, "Darling, I love you," and then 5 minutes later you do or say something unkind to her, your actions will cancel out your words. The opposite of kindness is unkindness. The opposite of love is hate. So anytime we're unkind, we communicate hatred. My family and I were in a buffet restaurant where they have one of those big chocolate dessert fountains. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I'm trying to make you hungry right now, in case you're wondering. We were wisely or unwisely sitting close to that fountain, just in case you're wondering. I like to sit close to those, even though I'm allergic to dark chocolate. At least I can dream about it, okay? Anyway, I heard a commotion and looked up to see a mother confront her 8 or 9 year old daughter who had chocolate on her face and hands. And the mother started screaming at her so loudly, almost everybody in the restaurant could have heard her, "Get in that bathroom and wash that chocolate off your face now!" My mind immediately did two things. First of all, I look forward just a few years to when that little girl will be a teenager. I can see her in trouble and the mother opens her mouth and screams again, and the girl just walks away and does whatever she wants to do. Dad and Mom, it's not the chocolate on the face and the hands. Today, it'll be chocolate. Tomorrow, it'll be something completely different. It is your response to it. And then I thought of how that girl could have handled that situation. You know what she could have done? She could have gotten down on one knee, taken the little girl by the elbows. I'm not sure there was another way to do it. You know? Looked her in the eyes. Parents, you are not communicating with your children if you're not looking them in the eyes and having them look you in the eyes. I see parents who scream at their children all day long. You will save yourself an enormous amount of time if you will look them in the eyes. And it's even better if you can be on their level when you look them in the eyes. And then she could have said, honey, we've got a little problem, don't we? And mommy's going to go with you. We're going to get you cleaned up. And when you come back out, you don't go to that chocolate fountain without mommy being with you. Say, yes, ma'am, mommy. Yes, ma'am, mommy. Okay, let's go take care of this problem. And that situation could have been resolved so much better than the anger and the screaming in front of everybody, embarrassing the child, hurting the child's feelings. And, you know, so many homes have been filled with unkindness for so many generations. We just keep passing the unkindness on to our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Read this statement, would you please, everybody? The test. You know what I mean by that? I was in Arkansas. I had given my key message on parenting, the three key elements of successful parenting. The pastor came up to me after the service, had his dad standing there with him, and he said, could I tell you why my brother and I have always admired and respected our dad? And I said, sure. He said, when we were little boys, my dad was in the driveway washing his car by dipping a sponge in and out of a bucket. You know, I've got you blocked off from being able to see, I think, here. I think this boy right here is having trouble seeing my screen. Let me back up a little bit here, all right? Especially children like watching the pictures, and you're really going to like watching these pictures. All right? My dad was in the driveway washing his car by dipping a sponge in and out of a bucket of soapy water, and mom called dad into the house for something. When dad came out of the house, my brother had decided he was going to help daddy wash the car, but he didn't use a sponge. He was using steel wool. He was dipping the steel wool in the soapy water, washing the side of dad's car with steel wool. Now, dad, stop and ask yourself right now, what would have been my response to that? And dad did not explode. Dad gently corrected my brother's mistake, and life went on. And I looked at this older dad standing there, saw the tears of love in his eyes, and knew immediately why his sons loved and respected him. By the way, it could have been a big rock the child was using. The child thought he was correcting. Kind correction was the only proper response. May I tell you, there has never been the paint on the side of a car as valuable as the heart of your child. That car is probably sitting in a salvage yard somewhere rusting away, but dad's kindness may last for generations. Everybody cannot be wealthy or famous. Everybody who will can be kind. Better to be known as a kind father than a wealthy father. Many wealthy fathers have rebellious children, but a consistently kind father is not as likely to have rebellious children. You're not going to be happy in your old age because of how much money you got in the bank. You're going to be happy because your children and grandchildren love you and want to be around you. Read off the screen, everybody, please. One of the most important things any parent can do is to tie heartstrings with their children. God uses His kindness to reach our hearts and cause us to want to respond to Him. And few things are as effective to reach the hearts of your children as simply, consistently being kind. Jeremiah 2 indicates that youth is the time to learn kindness. And one family wrote about what they do to teach their children this. He said, when my brothers and I were growing up, my parents implemented a neat tradition called Secret Angel, which I've now started in our home. Every Sunday night, we pass around a little bowl with each of our names on a folded up piece of paper. And then throughout that week, each family member is tasked with demonstrating the love of Christ to that person. Maybe it's offering to take his or her plate from the dining room table to the kitchen, or volunteering to do the other person's household chore, or making a card, or giving the other person a welcome foot rub. And the following Sunday night, we have to guess who our secret angel was. And the trick is to be so kind to so many family members that everybody thinks you were their secret angel. And when we catch somebody in the act of being kind, we jokingly ask, are you my secret angel? And our oft-repeated response is, wait and see, it's a mystery. Number four, use the power of kindness as a weapon to defeat bitterness, anger, envy, and vengeance. I gave this message in December in a ladies' prison right outside of Lincoln, Illinois. I had 400 ladies I gave this message. You would not believe the response these ladies gave to this message. It was like, wow. And I stopped right here at this point and I said, ladies, I understand you're not allowed to have any weapons in here. And everybody, oh, yeah. I mean, they responded. The whole crowd, oh, are you ever right? Boy, are you ever right? And I said, this is a weapon they will never find. This is a weapon that you can use. And if you will use it, nobody can take it away from you. One of the kindest people in the Bible was the widow lady named Ruth. Three ladies in the book of Ruth had all lost their husbands, but Naomi had lost her husband and both of her sons. Ruth stayed with bitter mother-in-law Naomi while sister-in-law Orpah walked away. And Ruth's kindness brought out kindness in kinsman Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, blessed be he, the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. God not only used Ruth's kindness as an antidote for the poison of Naomi's bitterness, he also used the kindness of Ruth to properly catch the eye of Boaz, who shortly thereafter went to the gate of the city and contracted to marry Ruth. Boaz said, blessed be thou the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning. Ruth just kept being more and more kind as the story progressed. When you're dealing with people who are having problems, you don't give up being kind. You increase the level of your kindness. Over 40 years ago now, as a young pastor, I got a telephone call that a single mother had just lost her teenage daughter in a terrible car accident. That teenage girl was her mother's whole life, and I preached the funeral and tried to comfort the mother. She would not be comforted. I remember visiting her after the funeral. She was so bitter, angry, and harsh. I thought she didn't want me around, so I didn't go back. A couple of years went by. One day I was out going door to door witnessing to people and was surprised to have this lady answer the door of the house I had just knocked on. We chatted for a little while and then she leveled both barrels at me. She looked at me and she was relentless, angry. You don't care anything about me. If you cared about me, you would have kept coming to see me after my daughter died. Tried to tell her I did care. It didn't do any good. Finally, I said to her, Marcia, I'm going to keep coming to see you, and you'll know that I care. For the next 35 years, there was no lady in the city of Lincoln whom my wife and I visited more than we did Marcia. Over and over, we went to her house. I asked my wife, I said, honey, how often do we visit her? She said, at least every couple of months. In all those years, I think we only got her to come to our church one time, but she couldn't stand coming to our church because it brought back too many memories of her daughter. My wife and daughters cleaned house for her. We had her to our house for Thanksgiving. She didn't have hardly any family, and the ones that she did have, it was like her bitterness had walled her off from them. It was about 30 years after the death of her daughter. One day we knocked on the door of her house. Marcia came to the door with the biggest smile I ever saw her have on her face. And she said, Pastor Davis, Regine, y'all come on in. I've got a wonderful news for you. We walked in, we sat down, she looked at us and she said, last Sunday I went to Latham Baptist Church over in Latham and I got saved. And we just rejoiced with her. 2 weeks later, we went back again. She said, last Sunday I went, I got baptized. We just rejoiced. And, you know, it really didn't matter where she went to church. She was just sort of ours for life, you know. One day, we were visiting with her, and she said, Pastor Davis, I don't really have any family. I've decided I'm leaving almost everything I have to your church. And after I stepped down as pastor, she died and was buried while I was traveling and away from home. I felt terrible. I didn't get to go to the funeral. And several months later, our church received a check for almost $40,000. Marcia was so bitter that I didn't understand. She did not need the absence of my presence. She needed the presence of my kindness. Ephesians 4:31 gives a list of some of the biggest problems in our world today. Bitterness. Look at that list. Wrath, anger, clamor, evil speaking, malice. But the next verse gives the solution to those problems. Be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. And by the way, would you look at that verse? Everybody look at the screen. Everybody look at the screen. Everybody in this room is either living in verse 31 or you're living in verse 32. If I ask your husband or wife which verse you're in most, what would they say to me? If I ask your parents, if I ask your children, which verse are you living in? If I ask the people that you work around, which verse do you live in? What would they say to me? Now, I wrote a tune to this. Be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. And I walk with my little grandchildren and I sing that song all the time. Yet I'll explain this tonight. They get my anger series and they watch the anger series and they deal with their anger. But what you really need to do is you need to pray, God, help me to be kind with my words, my attitudes, and my actions. You can be firm and still be kind. You cannot be furious and still be kind. Let the righteous smite me. It shall be a kindness. I thank God for all the times in my life when I was reproved because I needed it. But you know, I especially am grateful those times when somebody did it with some kindness. The spoonful of sugar, the kindness helped the medicine, the reproof to go down. There's a world of difference between kind reproof and caustic reproof. Kindness is not indulgence. It's not always giving people what they want. It's giving them what they need. It's not unkind to discipline a child. It's just unkind to do it with any kind of anger whatsoever. How did God conquer our hard hearts? He conquered it with His goodness and His kindness. Romans chapter 2 verse 4. Despisest thou the riches of God's goodness and forbearance and longsuffering, knowing not that the goodness of God leadeth thee to repentance. And that's the same word for kind. God is so good. God is so kind to everybody all the time. Even when they're sinning against Him. Even when they're claiming He doesn't exist or they're claiming that He's not good. How in the world how do you reject the kindness of God when He's so good to you all the time? Titus 3 describes how God's kindness conquers our malice, our envy, and our hatred. Somebody put it like this. Read it, please. No. Now, I want you to read my points with me out loud, and I'll give you the last one, and we'll wind this up, all right? Read it, please, everybody. Use the power of kindness to enhance your own personal testimony. Number two, use the other people's lives. Number three, use the power of kindness to solve or prevent family problems. Number four, use the power of kindness as a weapon to defeat bitterness, anger, envy, and vengeance. And number five, use the power of kindness to repay kindness is shown to you. I'm amazed at how much the Bible talks about this. In Genesis 40, Joseph had been sold by his brothers into slavery and was sitting in an Egyptian prison. And Pharaoh's butler and baker were also there. And Joseph interpreted their dreams and then said to the butler, "But think on me when it should be well with thee and show kindness unto me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh. Bring me out of this house." The butler was restored, but then he forgot all about Joseph. And you and I have to remember, just because somebody forgets us, doesn't mean that God has forgotten us. In the next chapter, Pharaoh had a dream, and when no one in the kingdom could interpret it, the butler said, I do remember my faults this day. It is a fault. If someone does something significant for you and you do not repay your debt of kindness to that person. So the butler told Pharaoh about Joseph, and Pharaoh sent and brought Joseph out of prison. Joseph interpreted his dream, and Joseph wound up as a prince over the entire land of Egypt. One of the biggest and most important things you'll do in life is to repay kindnesses done to you. My wife and I were sitting at this restaurant in Gaffney, South Carolina. That's the place where I was born and raised and spent the first 20 years of my life. I looked a few tables over and I saw Vernon Mullinax sitting there with his wife eating a meal, and remembered immediately that he was one of my dad's best friends. And my next thought was that Proverbs says, thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. Wow, God has given me an opportunity to be a friend to my dad's friend. My dad had gone to heaven about 20 years earlier. Not many of my dad's friends were still alive. I called the waitress over and I said, ma'am, I would like the ticket for that table over there. And ma'am, I'm going to pay both tables and make sure you get a good tip for both tables, so I don't want you to worry about that. So sometimes Christians have to choose between frugality and generosity. When you're in a spot like that, if you can, you always choose generosity. You'll have a better testimony for that. Anyway, I paid for the meal. And then we got done eating, and I went over and Brother Vernon recognized me right away. Brother Davis, what you up to? And I said, Brother Vernon, I just want to tell you before I go. I said, we paid for your meal. The tip's taken care of. It's all taken care of. He said, Brother Davis, why did you do that? And I said, Brother Vernon, you were a friend to my daddy. And my Bible says, thy father's friend and that thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. And y'all went places together. You did all kinds of things together. Thank you for Brother Vernon for being a friend to my daddy. And I gave him a big hug and left there with a heart so full of blessing that I didn't even notice I didn't have as much money as I went in there with. Stephen Grillet, American missionary born in 1773 from Pennsylvania, was credited with having made one of the most famous statements of all time. Read it with me off the screen, would you please? I expect to pass through this world but once. Any good let me do it now. Let me not defer or neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. After David killed Goliath, David and Jonathan became best friends. Years later, with Saul and Jonathan both having died on the battlefield, David was king of Israel, remembering his friendship with Jonathan, and said, is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? They called Ziba. And the king said, is there yet any of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God unto him? And Ziba said unto the king, Jonathan hath yet a son which is lame on his feet. And then the king David sent and fetched him out of the house of Maker. And when Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, son of Saul, was coming to David, he fell on his face and did reverence. He's probably frightened out of his wits. And David said, Mephibosheth, and he answered, behold thy servant. And David said unto him, fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness for Jonathan your daddy's sake, and will restore thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. So Mephibosheth ate from the king's table for the rest of his life, because David remembered how important it was to be kind to the son of his deceased friend. Dr. Bill Rice continued the story from his life, being a bitter young man trying to go to college during the Great Depression. He said, when we walked back to the house, the dear lady had set the table and I hungrily ate breakfast, dinner, and supper all at one time. Can y'all picture a young man doing that? As I ate, we talked. When I finished my meal, they excused themselves and they put down springs and mattresses on the front porch, and the old man said, Bill, you need to get to bed. You got a hard ride ahead of you tomorrow. And when I told him I would go to the barn to sleep, he said, oh no, the son of Will Rice will have the best bed in this house. Ma and I feel it will be pleasant for us to sleep on the front porch. Then this gray-haired rancher and his wife knelt on the front porch, and in the moonlight he lifted his head and prayed, and I fell to my backslidden knees as he prayed for me to have a good night's rest and be glad I'd stopped to spend the night with them. I was a very thoughtful young man as I pulled off my boots, got undressed, crawled into bed. Seemed I'd hardly fallen asleep when the old man was shaking my shoulder saying, Bill, you got to get up. You're going to be daylight soon. You got a long, hard ride ahead of you. Ma has breakfast almost ready. I rolled out of bed, dressed, walked into the kitchen for breakfast. Man alive, we had fried chicken biscuits and cowboy gravy. Then the man brought my horse up to the front gate. The lady had made a number of sandwiches for me to take. And the man reached into his pocket and pulled out a checkbook and said, Bill, takes money to go to college. I imagine you're going to need a little help. How much money do you think you will need for this first term of college? I couldn't believe my ears. I just met these folks. Here they were trying to give me money. I told him I didn't want any money from him, and believe it or not, I didn't let him give me a penny. But the old rancher gave me something I needed more than money. I needed confidence that God had not forgotten me. We walked down the path to the front gate, but before I mounted, I tried to thank them for their kindness to me. I said, why have you been so good to me? And the old man said, I was just about to tell you that, Bill. Years ago, when we came to this place, we invested all the money we had in the down payment. Our children were little. Drought came. Crops dried up. Our herd of cattle wasted away. The bank granted an extension on the note, but then things went from bad to worse. I was told to pay or lose the ranch. I tried to find work. No work was to be found. I was desperate. One day, when it seemed there was no hope, a tall stranger came riding down that same highway you were on yesterday on a horse. He stopped at my front yard gate just like you did. He said, I hear you're in trouble about to lose your ranch. I've come to see if I could help. I didn't even know the man, but he went to the bank with Ma and me. And he looked at the banker and he said, I believe these people are honest people and I want you to give them another chance. I believe they will pay you. And the banker listened to them. Then he came back to the house and he said to us, I want you to gather your family, all your children. I want you to gather everybody in the living room. And he said, you know what? You could lose a lot more than the ranch if you aren't careful. You could lose your souls. And he told us about Jesus. And he told us what Jesus had done and how to be saved. And my whole family trusted Christ and became Christians that day. Bill, because of that cowboy, I was able to not only pay for this ranch, but I was able to give each of my children their own ranch when they got married. But we would have lost this ranch and our souls had it not been for the stranger who came our way that day. Bill, you didn't know this, but that stranger was your father, Senator Will Rice. Some of the greatest stories you will ever hear are stories where people repay debts of kindness that are owed. 2 weeks ago, I was in Florida, and I met Bill Rice's grandson, who thanked me for this video and thanked me for telling this story around the country and told me what a blessing his grandfather and great-grandfather were to his life. May I ask you, are you sowing seeds of kindness that your children may be able to reap someday? Are you repaying others for kindnesses done to you in the past? Watch the screen. One act of kindness by one old man was so powerful that God used it to transform a young man's life who in turn became a world-renowned evangelist preaching all over America and the world. and eventually began the Bill Rice Ranch, which is still ministering to thousands of people today. And what if that old man had not remembered to repay his debt of kindness? Wonder how many tens of and I wonder how many people will be affected when you remember to repay debts of kindness. I'm winding up now, but could I say to you, no matter what your problem is today, your greatest need is to do what that rancher and his family did and trust Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior. I know you know about Him. Do you know Him? Is He living in your heart? Have you trusted Him as your personal Savior? I leave one picture with you. Painted 100 years ago. But you know what gets me about that picture? Look how kind He was. And you know what? If Jesus Christ were to personally walk into this auditorium with us today, you know what we'd all be impressed with? He would be the kindest person we had ever seen in our entire life.